Carlo Alberto Brunner, On the Bottom of the Ghetto, Rodolfo Brunner and the Adventure of Industrialization.
Back to my ancestors. They established a school in their city that immediately became one of the foremost in the empire. Among other things, Italian was taught, a language needed in Trieste and in the emerging Italy, as well as French, an international language at the time. It was a Jewish but not a denominational school and open to everybody. Hebrew language study was optional, even though Jewish families demanded it from their children. By then, however, my parents had already left Vorarlberg and arrived in Trieste, their new home. Here the industrial adventure began, which was to last for three generations, a commitment that continuously grew until the First World War. In the second half of the 19th century, a qualitative jump occurred. From wealthy people who were able to get by in a rather closed society, based on legalized privileges, to an increasingly open society in which the still existing privilege was of economic nature and barely protected by the law. However, at first, everybody embarked on the path of industrialization, which, albeit difficult and risky and despite of the inexperience of parts of the family, proved to be the smartest. My ancestors already had two cotton weaving mills. Cotton arrived almost exclusively from the United States, where representatives on site, people from Vorarlberg, ensured that everything ran smoothly. Not least because these old families' development had a somewhat mafia-like character. Indeed, with one difference to the mafia as we know it, or think we do, with a scrupulous adherence to the laws and the complete absence of any form of violence. What remained, though, was that relatives were to take precedence. At this point in time, something strange happened they had not foreseen. In America, a Republican president had been elected who had decided to abolish slavery. Subsequently, the black slaves who picked the cotton used in the weaving mills in the then county of Gorizia and Gradiska were liberated. But the democratic slaveholders didn't put up with that and prompted a war, which my great-grandfather would somewhat cynically call the Cotton War. Initially, he was worried about the American events. We are in the year 1861, and my grandfather was a little boy who had just started talking. Each day, upon entering his office, my great-grandfather would find that the price for cotton at the London Stock Exchange had risen. Indeed, the Union Navy had succeeded in completely blockading the harbors of the Confederates of the South. Not a single bale got out to Europe. Eventually, he made up his mind that this couldn't go on, despite the large stocks he had at his disposal. He decided to close shop by sending everybody home and selling the cotton in stock at a highly elevated price. At the time, there existed neither an unemployment fund nor any kind of unemployment insurance. In the countryside, however, family solidarity in an agricultural society was common practice. When the war ended with the Union's victory, 5 years' worth of unsold cotton harvests flooded the markets at very low prices. The patriarch, who had acted so reasonably, then found himself with an adequate measure of liquid capital to invest into his factories, which had now resumed operations at full speed. By then, they had become big. The time had arrived for someone from the family to go to England, where the industrial system had had its origins, to learn from these English devils who knew everything. And thus, in the late 1870s, my then young and handsome grandfather, who wanted to get to know the world, was entrusted to an old and famous industrialist in Manchester who shared with his father business ties and knowledge. In Manchester, everything was different. They already had running water and bathrooms with tubs and showers and, of course, nice toilets with flushing system and beautiful oak seats. At the foot of the toilet bowl, the royal coat of arms, with the Lion of England, the Harp of Ireland, and diagonally in both quarters, the Lions of Normandy, framed by the Lion and the Unicorn, and below the cartouche of William the Conqueror, Dieu est mon droit. I first encountered this sanitary facility in our country home, where my grandfather had had it installed during the First World War, a tribute to the indisputable superiority of the English.